Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Is the world more peaceful since the revolution? It is a shame that your people suffered. But bounty hunting is a complicated profession.
Hello and welcome back to Still Watching the Mandalorian. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair special correspondent Anthony Bresnikan.
Each week on this podcast, we like to break down the latest episode of the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian. We are up to chapter 6.
Chapter 6.
The Prisoner. And we will only be spoiling anything up through this episode, so no future spoilers from us. We actually don't know anything really, so there's no danger of it.
Hey, come on, we know a little bit. Let's not undersell it. We know some things.
We know some things. It's true. But we will not let them find their way into this discussion of Chapter 6. You can always email us at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com, and we really appreciate your emails and feedback. And we wanted to start with something that a few people reached out to us about regarding last week's episode. That's where we want to start. We're going to start with last week.
And this was something that I did not catch right away. It kind of made me wonder initially, but there was a clue that I didn't catch. I had no idea about the jangling.
All right. So we talked about this figure that comes, you know, our lady assassin, Ming-Na Wen, is on the ground at the end of last week's episode. Fennec Shan. Anthony and I are bummed out. We're like, ah, we wanted more of her. What's going on? And in our grief, we missed a clue, which was, you know, someone comes walking up. We were wondering last week, who could that be? And we threw out some ideas of cast members who hadn't been revealed yet. But the person who walks up, I think you even mentioned at the time, like, spurs a jangling. The jangling has a clue in it. What's that clue, Anthony Bresnikan?
Well, in the original trilogy, whenever Boba Fett walks around, he's got spurs, a jingle, jangle, jingle.
A jingle, jangle, spurs.
He sounds like I do at Dingling Day before Christmas time in elementary school when I came to school dressed as an elf as part of a competition about who could wear the most bells.
We need to talk about something really quickly, because you just said Ding-a-ling Day as if it's a thing that, like, we universally experienced as humans. What is Ding-a-ling Day?
It was at St. Joe's Catholic Elementary School in Pennsylvania in first grade. They had a contest, and you had to come to school dressed in your most Christmassy fashion. So I had a felt elf outfit that I think my grandma made me, and my mom sewed little jingly bells on it, and I wore the top half of a Santa Claus styrofoam Christmas cooler as a hat. That's not embarrassing.
That's incredible. It's just incredible. Thank you for sharing.
I won the hell out of Ding-a-ling Day. I won it. That was the last time I won anything.
Wow. I think they should introduce Ding-a-ling Day as like a special Star Wars holiday and make it canon. Make it canon. Boba Fett can win every year. But anyway, so that's a hint that it might be Boba Fett, the end of this episode. The last time we saw Boba Fett, he had fallen into the
Good segue back, Joanna. Right back. We went off the cliff like an episode of Dukes of Hazzard and freeze framed, and you were like, and back to the Mandalorian. Okay.
Meanwhile, back to the Mandalorian.
Back in a universe that makes sense.
Those Duke brothers. It might have been It might have been Boba Fett, and that would be interesting for a few reasons. Number one, the last time we saw Boba Fett, he had fallen into the Sarlacc pit a little, like, unceremoniously. So he might have activated his jetpack and flown out of there, possibly. Could have happened. It would be kind of funny because, you know, a lot of people, when The Mandalorian was announced, a lot of people were like, come on, this is Boba Fett, right? And then the makers of this series were like, no, we promise this is not Boba Fett. And they're like, okay, but it's Boba Fett. You could just say that is Boba Fett. And they were like, no, we promise Pedro Pascal is not playing Boba Fett. But like, if Boba Fett's in the show, they technically did not lie. So, you know, it's possible. And that would also kind of explain why we were on Tatooine in the first place. Nostalgia aside, like, why go to Tatooine otherwise if not to, you know, pick up a character who was last seen there. So,
well, there is another aspect to consider.
Sure, hit me.
I'd like to submit into evidence the Aftermath trilogy written by Chuck Wendig, which posits that the, what is it called, the Great Pit of Carcoon, where the Sarlacc resides, was raided, and Tatooine residents kind of, you know how you'll find like some sort of like a natural spring in the mountains of Utah, and they dive down to the bottom of it and find artifacts, pieces of pottery, or, you know, like a rifle from the Old West or something.
Sure,
so they kind of do that. The people of Tatooine somehow figure out a way to get into the Sarlacc and pump its stomach, pull out a couple of old license plates and baby doll heads and whatever the hell else has been chucked down into that. And in Aftermath, the Jawas recover some what Chuck Wendig called all too familiar Mandalorian armor.
Right.
And at a certain point in the series, a character named Cobb Vanth, who's like a local lawman, puts on the armor and fortifies himself to sort of clean up his town. So, if Boba Fett is indeed deceased and his corporeal form is being slowly digested, what is it, over the course of a couple thousand years in the stomach of the Sarlacc, then his armor, that armor could be on another character. So it might be the jangling boots, but worn by perhaps Cobb Vanth or somebody else who takes on the armor. It might be like Luke and Anakin's lightsaber, where this is just an artifact that is now passing down through various hands until it ends up protecting a new hero or anti-hero or villain. Who knows?
And what do we know of this character? Cobb Vanth.
He's sort of a side character in Wendig's books. A good guy, though. You know, he means well. Sort of like I don't know, like, what the correlation to other storytelling might be. It's not exactly the sword and the stone. It's just like that he found this thing that was part of history, and now he's using it to confront, you know, dangers in the present day. So it could be that he turns up there. The timeline kind of matches, you know, because Aftermath was set after the events of Return of the Jedi. So could be.
And Aftermath is canon?
Aftermath is canon. Yeah,
all right.
This is where they explore the Battle of Jakku and tie up a lot of the loose ends that they were not able to do cinematically to explain like how the Empire actually fell after Return of the Jedi, and then how the New Republic rose from all that.
And you know, as we discovered in this episode, and we'll get to who's in this episode of chapter 6 of The Mandalorian, but anyone could be in the show at this point, as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't have to be like an actor we're already aware of wearing that suit. That being said, I just want to entertain this idea for a second. We've only seen Giancarlo Esposito's character really from like the shoulders up.
Yeah.
So far in promos, he doesn't appear to be wearing anything particularly Fetty, Boba Fetty.
No.
And he described his character, speaking with Entertainment Tonight, he described his character as a warden of the universe. I play a guy who was a warden of the universe. He was in power before the Empire collapsed. You don't know if he's good or bad, but he certainly is a guy who has order in his life. He's an exciting guy because he has all of the equipment and spaceships at his ready. So we only have two more episodes, right, after this one? Is that... Am I right? Or maybe three episodes? Is it a 9-episode season? Sorry. I'm getting confused with The Watchmen, which is only 8 episodes. But we only have a few more episodes, I'll say that. So, to meet Giancarlo Esposito's character and to be wowed by him. So, who knows? He might show up with some jingle jangle boots to go with all of his other cool equipment that he has.
I think it's perhaps more likely that they did the jangling as a red herring, as a little way to make people chatter, just like they showed that very Boba Fett looking figure in the background of like episode one. I don't necessarily believe that that's Boba Fett. I think that Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni want you to ask if that's Boba Fett.
They want us to wonder. Sure.
Could that be? And so it's done. Not, and then, what? No. What? Come on. That's not Boba Fett. Oh, who's this jingly character? You know?
here's what I will say. I hope that whoever it is, it gets resolved this season. I would prefer this not to be a thread we have to pick up, like, you know, a year from now or whatever, when The Mandalorian season 2 premieres.
Because then it'll lead to some divisive, like, factions in the fandom. Yeah. Like,
resolve it now. Do us all a favor. Thank you so
much. The Fetlows or whatever, you know.
And then, so Anthony and I are going to talk about chapter 6, The Prisoner. But also at the end of this episode, we're going to do a little Rise of Skywalker chatter, a little extra Rise of Skywalker chatter, because he and I have not seen the movie yet, but this will be the last episode of the podcast we record before we have seen the movie. So the last episode we can spend sort of speculating, wishing, whatever, you know. So we're going to do a little Rise of Skywalker chatter at the end. So
and by the way, only 2 episodes left.
Okay, right. So 8 episode season.
Unless they're going to pull like a surprise, you know. Surprise is a 9th one coming, but no, right now.
Or the last one's 2 hours or something like that. Who knows?
Right.
Yeah, because this episode, circling back, this episode is longish in that it is over 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, compared to some of the other shorties that we've had this season, this is a longer episode. The writer of the episode, Chris Yost, described this episode to me as a heist episode. So, it's a prison break episode, basically, where we have the Mandalorian meeting up with some unsavory characters, some of whom he used to run with, and he has to go on this, this mission, this heist, whilst preserving his code, his honor, all for the money, I suppose.
I really like this one. Rick, Famuyiwa, who directed episode 2, directed this one. I thought it had a great pace. I was really into it.
I like all the characters we met. I'm a big fan of like the, you know, it's hard to, within the span of 40 minutes, and that's what every episode of The Mandalorian has tried to do, but like introduce a character and you feel like you know who that character is and you're sort of like somewhat invested, if not like deeply emotionally, then at least like on an entertainment level. And I think this is one of the most successful efforts yet to like introduce a rogues gallery of characters that we can really latch onto. Let's talk about casting. So hey, Clancy Brown.
Yes.
Genre fave Clancy Brown is in this episode, rocking a very like Tim Curry and Legend red skin horned look, as far as I'm concerned. But I did not know Clancy Brown was gonna be in The Mandalorian, so that was a fun surprise.
Now he's playing a kind of alien that turned up in the, I believe it was in the cantina in the original Star Wars movie from 1977, where they just show a bunch of creepy looking weirdos hanging out in the shadows. You know, that, I think at one point, maybe this was removed by the special edition, there was like a wolfman in a spacesuit.
Right.
And then there's this, this devil horned mofo, which we learn is called a Deveronian.
I love that as a name.
Yeah.
So do you think there's like some friend? Like ever since you mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I keep like thinking of the friend who maybe got a thing named for them. So like Bob Devereaux, you know, now has like an alien race name for
them. Or like, you know, you're Daniel Deveronian, who, you know, swell Armenian fellow from down the street. Really good guy. Went to high school with him.
You never know.
Just a full on, like, yeah. So Deveronian, I think also more likely the Dev, you know, devil.
Right.
It's clearly like this scary red faced horned creature. I mean, the character's name is Blurg. Blurg, if he ever decides to give up heists and jailbreaks, would have a really fruitful career posing as the model for hot sauce bottles.
what a great alternate career. Yeah, I love, you know, it.
Star Wars hot sauce.
a big surprise in this episode, not casting wise because we knew he was in it, but just performance wise for me, is Bill Burr. Bill Burr, we knew he's largely a comedian, though he's like done some acting. Mm-hmm. We knew he was in the show. Anthony had mentioned that he was just sort of like not really a Star Wars fan, was just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm in this thing, who cares. He's, I think, great in this. What did you think of Bill Burr?
Yeah, a kind of a divisive comedian.
Absolutely.
He's,
and I actually think that this episode lampshades that a little bit, right? By having him do a Gungan impression.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess so. I didn't think of it quite that way, but yeah. At one point he taunts the Mandalorian, take off your helmet. What are you, a Gungan under there? And he does a whole, like, Misa,
yeah,
you know, like, accent.
Yikes.
And,
yeah. Which is very Bill Burr, honestly.
Yeah. You know, kind of a comedian known for punching down, I think, is part of the problem with him. Is the comedians often say provocative, maybe upsetting or, you know, pearl-grasping things, but Bill Burr kind of has a reputation for, you know, punching down at people. And I have to say, like, I watched some of his last comedy special, and that just made me really sad. It's like watching somebody get bullied, you know? So I just want to preface it with that. Like, I actually really do think he did a great job in this movie or in this episode, but
I would not. Yeah. I think
it was kind of lingering in the back of my mind a little bit. I don't know.
I think he did a great job in this episode. I would not recommend anyone listen to his comedy personally. That would be my,
I like kind of some of his other comedy. I guess this most recent one, I don't know, just felt a little mean spirited, but he plays a very mean, dickish kind of guy in this, so I don't know. Maybe it's typecasting. Even his approach to Star Wars, where he was like basically ridiculing it and being dismissive of it, I think that's just kind of his thing, is that he pushes, his comedy is that he pushes the buttons by kind of outraging you. So, you know.
Then we have Natalia Tena, Tenya, I can't remember how you pronounce her last name, but she plays Shion, which is a Twi'lek who is a potential former girlfriend of the Mandalorian, a very Harley Quinn type character. This is a very Suicide Squad / Guardians of the Galaxy episode. And, you know, a lot of people know her from her work in Harry Potter or Game of Thrones.
Who was she in Harry Potter?
She's Tonks. She plays Tonks.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah. So, what did you think of her? I loved her. I love the, like, knife throwing stuff. I love that stuff. What did you think of her in this?
Wonderful. Like, she's got to act beneath, like, purplish makeup and
have fangs.
And fangs and the giant, head tails. She projected a lot of menace, a lot of like flirtatious menace too. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know that they were ever a thing. I think she always was trying to tantalize. I think it was like mocking a priest, you know, like that the Mandalorian's never going to take the helmet off. You know, he's never going to take the collar off. Like, just sort of like, torment him a little and flirt with him and play it up and just almost like it reminded me a little bit of the dynamic we often see between Catwoman and Batman. And, you know, that Catwoman is very playful and taunting and slinky and flirtatious, and Batman is always just, you know, a robot. So I love the little interplay between them.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. One of my favorite comedians of all times, Richard Ayoade, gets to voice a droid. Couldn't think of a more perfect voice for a droid than Richard Ayoade, who's just this like bone dry British comedian and great filmmaker to boot. And
the IT crowd series.
Yeah, Moss from the IT crowd, just great stuff. I lost my mind when I heard his voice. I like got so excited. So
meet like grasshopper headed droid.
Yeah.
That was a cool design for the droid.
Yeah, very cool. And then the member of their party that they're going to rescue is an actor, Ismael Cruz Cordova. Do you know why this is? I also lost my mind when I found out why this is funny. Do you know why this is funny?
I don't know why it's funny. No, tell me.
All right. So, in addition to some of the other work that he's done, Ismael got his start on Sesame Street, playing a character named Mando. If you look up on YouTube, there's a great song that he did on Sesame Street called What Rhymes with Mando.
No way.
It's like teaching kids Spanish, because a lot of Spanish words, at the end of the Spanish word rhymes with Mando. His name is like Mando. And so it's a really cute little song, like What Rhymes with Mando on YouTube. You can watch it. So that's the actor under all the lavender makeup as Xion's brother, the prisoner that they're rescuing. So that was really fun. And then the guy back in the garage, Mark Boone Jr., who I loved on Sons of Anarchy, big mm-hmm. fan of him. I thought he was a great fit for this show as well.
Yeah, he was. I mean, just kind of playing, what's the character from Sons of Anarchy? Is it Junior?
I can't remember. He was just doing his Sons of Anarchy thing. It's true.
I mean, I just kept thinking, like, if I hadn't seen him executed, like, and that scene where they, no, never mind. I'm giving away Sons of Anarchy spoilers here, but like, I don't know, should we take that out?
No, it's okay. He played Bobby Munson Sons of Anarchy. Yeah.
So anyway, he
was basically doing Bobby, but I didn't mind because like, there's not, Sons of Anarchy at the end there was really trying my patience, but he never did. Like, I loved him on Sons of Anarchy, so I was really happy to see him doing his shtick. And then let's talk about some cameos. Obviously, mm-hmm. we've got three director cameos in this episode as Rebel pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, who directed this episode, Rick
Famuyiwa. Yeah, Rick Famuyiwa, he plays Jib Dodger.
Oh, love it. Deborah Chow, what's her character's name?
It is Sash Ketter.
Oh, love it. And Dave Filoni. What's his character's name?
Trapper Wolf.
Oh, amazing. What fun.
Dave Filoni is a big, like, wolf fan, like, old, like almost like frontiersman kind of. He's interested in that history.
Like George R. R. Martin. He and George should talk about their love of wolves.
Kinda, yeah. And he, like, knows about, like, famous wolves that were tracked, like, you know, notorious wolves, almost like criminal wolves who develop like reputations in certain parts of the country in certain bygone eras. So Trapper Wolf. I don't know. I'd like to these guys. I asked my friends at Lucasfilm, like, okay, does this squadron have a name? They didn't have one. I propose Shepherd Squadron.
Okay.
All directors guiding us through.
Love it. Love it. So that was really fun to see them. And then there's one more cameo in this episode that some people who've only watched like live action Star Wars, or even people who are fans of the animated series might not be aware of, but Matt Lantner, who voiced Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels,
yes,
shows up as this little, like, I think his character's name is Davin, and he's a like a rebel, I don't know, soldier. What's his, I don't know, prison guard.
He didn't get a name in the, I couldn't quite catch it as it went by. Like, he kind of mutters it, like, his first name.
I thought it was Davin. That's what I wrote down.
Like,
but,
And then, like, in the credits, it's, like, just, like, rebel soldier or a Republic soldier.
Sure. So yeah, New Republic soldier. So the guy, yeah, that's right. I shouldn't call them rebels. The New Republic is a thing. But so the guy in the silly helmet guarding the prison ship, the only human
Egghead aboard. Bill Burr called him.
yeah, that's a little fun little cameo for the animated Anakin Skywalker. So
I mean, and Clancy Brown also he has kind of a rich history in Star Wars animation. He was Savage Opress in Clone Wars, you know, the
Darth Maul's
the even meaner brother of Darth Maul. And then Ryder Azadi, I think was his name, Azadi from Star Wars Rebels. You know, he was like a human in that one for a change, not playing a horned demon-like creature. But I thought he was. I love Clancy Brown. I think that guy is, he's so intimidating, just sitting still, just not doing anything. And he has that look like the assistant principal who just wants to beat the crap out of you and is barely holding it together.
Oh my God. What else happened on Dingle Dingle Day.
Jingle, jingle, jingle.
Jeez. Yeah, Clancy Brown has never phoned in a day in his life is the whole thing about Clancy Brown, right? Like, he's always there. He always shows up. He's always great. I've been rewatching Lost recently. He's in Lost.
That's
been on my mind. But, you know, he just shows up everywhere, is incredibly tall, has that great voice, and it's just fantastic. I thought he was really fun in this too. So yeah. So since you're the Western expert out of the two of us, Anthony, I'll share this with you. This premise, which is like a guy who used to do worse stuff but is now trying to live the straight and narrow a bit more, has to team up with his like old criminal pals and do a job. That seems to me to be like, I feel like I've seen that story. But I could not like put a finger on it of like where I've seen that story before. And then I did this really embarrassing thing where I looked up like top 100 Westerns or something like that and like read like the plot summary of all of them to see if there was like a really famous Western that I was forgetting that has this plot. But I couldn't find any because I was going to show up and be like, oh yeah, this is a very, episode. But I couldn't find anything that matched this description. So do you think is this referencing any premise or any movie that I'm overlooking?
Well, jailbreaks were like, you know, a kind of a common trope of Westerns, I guess.
Sure.
I can't think of like one where that was the only plot, you know, where like the core plot, it's usually like, you know, that's part of the story. You know, you bust out your teammates. Like, it reminds me a little of, like, I don't know if this even happened in Ocean's 11, but, like, team heist movies where you got to get the last member. Like, the first act is getting the last member of the team together. And you got to bust that person out of, like, you know, a Guatemalan insane asylum or something. And this is going to be... do I want to be the entertainment journalist who is constantly citing the A-Team? No.
but
in the A-Team, they were always breaking Murdoch out of like the insane asylums and penitentiaries and things. Like, he was always like He was always detained or captured somewhere, and then they would go and bust him out at the beginning of, like, a lot of the episodes.
All right. So, my team, something you said actually reminded me of a Western I have seen 1 million times. You mentioned that the dynamic between Shion and the Mandalorian reminded you of, like, Teasing the Priest or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I thought of... honestly, genuinely one of my favorite Westerns, maybe one of my favorite movies. Please don't judge me, everyone. Please don't unfollow me on Twitter for this. It is Sam Raimi's The Quick and the Dead. I love this movie for some reason. And Russell Crowe plays this guy who used to be like a brutal killer gunslinger, but has become a priest. And Gene Hackman, who's this like bad dude who runs the town, his whole, motivation around Russell Crowe's character is to get him to like, break his honor, break his code, like stray from the path and take up his old gunslinging ways. And so that kind of reminded me of sort of what's a little bit of what's going on with the Mandalorian here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, watch The Quick and the Dead if you haven't, because Sharon Stone wears some incredible coats in that and you won't regret it. And you might regret it, but don't come crying to me if you do. Okay. So, so the only reason that these team of ne'er-do-wells, have asked the Mandalorian to join them is they need the Razor Crest because it is off the radar of both, Imperial or ex-Imperial forces and the New Republic. They call it a ghost ship. Mm. Do you have any, like, further info on what exactly that means, Anthony?
I mean, I heard that. I was like, okay.
Sure. Is that why he was able to just like zoom past those New Republic, the New Republic squadron? They come to like blow up this, at the very end, they come to blow up this space station or whatever and just ignore the ship that zooms past them.
I guess I just felt like, okay, that's the internal, like that somebody in the writer's room said, wait, why do they need the Mando? How about if his ship is like kind of old school, so it doesn't have all the tracking stuff on it that and it can kind of slip through? Well, okay, yeah, we'll just say that it has the whatever device. Okay, it's
convenient. It's,
convenient. You remember in Thank You for Smoking when they're meeting about it's Rob Lowe, the agent, talking to Aaron Eckhart's like smoking what is he, like the smoking lobbyist, like,
yeah
we need to get like smoking in space, and he's like, yeah, but what about like the oxygen, like that wouldn't, you know, in a space movie you wouldn't be smoking in space. He's like, oh no, we just add a line where we say, you know, thank goodness we invented the whatever device to allow us to smoke in space in a high oxygen environment. Oh, okay, yeah, we'll just make that up. That's what this felt like a little to me. But I guess the premise is, I guess if you think of it in terms of like our cars today have like, you can track them and, you know, have a satellite unlock it. And there's like computerization that if you wanted, to slip through and not be detected, then you would drive like, a 1987 Toyota Corolla.
Sure.
That doesn't have any of that gear in it, or whatever, you know, the whatever device.
Yeah, the Toyota Corolla with the gun closet. It's fine. Mm-hmm. That's what our ship is. I wanted to talk to you really quickly about, you know, like the plot of this episode isn't that hard to track at all. You know, like they break the guy out.
Double crosses
Mando. Mando gets his revenge, doesn't kill them because he's got a code. Though I don't know how those double doors didn't smoosh Clancy Brown's character, but that's okay.
Well, they hear what they did. That was one of my favorite moments. I really laughed when that happened. So Blurg, they slam the door down on top of Blurg. Harrison Ford beginning to shoot The Force Awakens style. And you think he's deceased or cut in half. And then you see the door rise back up.
Yeah.
He's so effing strong that he can just push his way up. And he's grinning like madly and ha ha, you know, can't kill me. I'm Blurg. And then as we've often seen in Star Wars, like, horizontal doors close or vertical doors close and then horizontal ones close. Well, then the other doors slam shut on his face. And at the end, when we see that Mando did not kill them, that they are just locked up in a cell, if you'll notice the horns of Blurg are like smashed off. So it kind of, basically his, you know, cause he was hoisting the back door on his shoulder. So it was, that thing slammed on his head. and it didn't crush his skull, but it just snapped off his horns. So he's been dehorned.
All right. So he lost his horns, but not his life. So there's that. I mean, I think all of us who have seen at least like two TV shows in our lives knew that those characters weren't going to be dead because the camera cut away before they died.
Right.
But I was happy to see them all in that because it means we could see them again later with even more cause to hate the Mandalorian.
Mando's not a cold-blooded killer, too. I think it has to establish.
Well, okay, yes. But that's something I actually wanted to talk to you about because...
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Oh. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The Mandalorian has this line, right, where he won't kill another, living, breathing creature, but he hates droids and will just smash through droids. And I'm actually wondering if this episode is trying to say anything about that because, like, ordinarily I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think it's too deep. It's just, like, a way that our hero can kill a lot of people without us thinking less of him because they're just, like, you know, hunks of metal or whatever. This episode really pushes on, like, his hatred of the droids. And then that last droid that he kills by ripping off his arm, there's this, like, spatter of oil coming off of his, like, arm socket.
Droid that, horror, yeah.
Yeah, that I thought was meant to really, like... make us, I mean, I don't know if I'm overthinking it, but make us ask the question, like, what is the difference really between, you know, okay, he has a code, but like, he's brutal. And this episode is also like, Shion keeps saying, like, I know who you really are. I know, oh, you did that job, but you enjoyed it. I know who you really are. You really have this darkness inside of you. And so, you know, we see him rip that arm off that droid. And I think we're meant to have some questions about the Mandalorian and his taste for violence. And also, how much of a distinction should we be? You know, like, we think of C-3PO as a friend of the family. You know what I mean? Like, that's, what if the Mandalorian brutally murdered C-3PO? Would we think he's so heroic then? Like, what's, you know, what are some of the questions we should be asking around this?
Yeah, I think so. I think, look, droids are... The interesting thing about droids are, I feel like there are droids that have personality, and then there are, like, those guard droids that are just... maybe they have hopes and dreams, but they're more or less just automatons, and not droids, where a droid would be like a... I know there isn't a distinction drawn necessarily in the text of the story, but, like, you know, R2-D2 has a personality. BB-8 has a personality. Not every mechanism has a personality, it seems. So maybe it's the more you get to know them, droids can also be blown apart and repaired. So, unlike humans. I don't know, I guess it just shows his brutality with robots, but I don't know. I think we're going to learn a little more about what motivates that.
Well, and we've seen some hints of that, right? Like in the flashbacks to this purge,
they're battle droids. Like, battle droids killed my parents. You know, like, that's seems mm-hmm. to be the source
a
of
battle droid friend. Killed my pa. Yeah.
that's the source of his bigotry, I would say. I don't know. I just think of all the things, I think that spray of oil was really meant to make us question, him, the Mandalorian in general. Okay. I have another question for you.
Okay.
So, speaking of which, our droid of the week, Zero, right? Z, is trying to, like, sort of pin down Baby Yoda. And Baby Yoda, like, goes to kind of use the Force on him and can't, and sort of looks at his hand like, why are you malfunctioning or whatever? And the Mandalorian hops in and dispatches, Z for him. In another one of those, like, you think the shot is hitting the baby, but actually it's the Mandalorian shooting.
Third time.
When is the last time you remember seeing Baby Yoda use the Force?
When the Mudhorn is attacking.
Right. So we have not seen Baby Yoda use the Force since he went to the doctor.
Oh.
So, which, like, you know, we've been distracted by, like, bone broth sipping and, like, all sorts of other cute things that Baby Yoda's been doing, but he has not been using the Force. And so I don't know if there's a couple options here. Number one, he's still tired from the last time he used it. Number two, you know, he's just a baby, blah, blah. Number two, it's erratic. It has to be erratic for narrative purposes. He can't be, like, saving himself and the Mandalorian with the Force all the time. Or number three, the doctor took his Force away or suppressed it in some way.
We've got the necessary material, right? Isn't that what they say?
Yeah, yeah. So maybe did they take...
extract his midichlorians.
I just don't want it to be about midichlorians. I just don't want that. But it might be. It might be. So,
ooh, what if the premise is, you know, we create these Force-sensitive beings and then we take their Force powers? Like... and create, like, a Force vaccine, like a super soldier serum. That's messed up.
Or it's like a Fahrenheit for, like, suppress the Force on everyone so that no one can have the Force.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm, like a Force vaccine.
Right. So, you know, like, this hadn't occurred to me. Our producer, actually, Dave Gonzalez, is the one who brought it up to me this morning. I was like, what do you mean? We've been watching Baby Yoda use the Force all the time. He's like, halfway. And no. I was like, oh, no. There's one question mark is when they were on Tatooine, like, how did the baby get out of the ship in order to, like, wander up in front of Amy Sedaris? But I think that there is, like, very easy, like... He just opened a door answer to that. No,
yeah,
not necessarily.
He's just wandering
Force.
Around.
Yeah. So, yeah. So let's get Baby Yoda's powers back. Might be the new mission. Who knows? But, that's the thing that happened. And then, I only have one more. I mean, there's a mouse droid, which is a cute little, like, reference to, original Star Wars. And then there's this.
But they're everywhere. They're all over the place.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just, it's always fun to see them. This Ardenian, I think, is the name of this creature, this four-armed blue-furred creature that's in one of the cells, is a species that Jon Favreau voiced in Solo, a Star Wars story.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So that was a nice little Easter egg. Is there any other, like, little
Rio Durant.
God, you love a Star Wars name. Were there any other, like, references or homages that you wanted to mention in this episode?
I didn't see, you know, I actually appreciate that it's getting a little less, like, Easter eggy.
Yeah.
As fun as Easter eggs are, they also, I feel, can be a little distracting. I'm much more into the idea of, like, don't they say that Mayfeld, the Bill Burr character, like, he's an ex-stormtrooper, and he's like, I wasn't a stormtrooper, why is that?
He was a sharpshooter. He's like, oh, that doesn't say much. And he's like, I wasn't a stormtrooper, because stormtroopers are notoriously bad shots. Yeah,
I guess so, yeah.
That was a good joke. He said the ship looked like a Canto Bite slot machine. So a nice little Canto Bite reference in the episode.
Yeah, I also, I, you know, last week with all the references last week, it was kind of nice to keep this, a little light and to just like, yeah, have this rogues gallery of characters that I immediately like loved watching and would love to see come back. Except for the two that got blown up, I guess. But, oh, and probably the droid too is toast. But, you know, our Suicide Squad is locked in jail. It would be nice to see them again. So maybe in season two, we will. Anything else you want to mention in this episode?
I think that does it for me. It kind of covers it.
All right. Yeah. Like a fun episode. Nothing particularly like too deep except the Mando sort of some glimpses of what the Mando might have been like in his earlier time. All right. So that brings us to the other thing we want to talk about before we close out, which is The Rise of Skywalker. Anthony and I will be seeing it in just a couple days. And I'm really excited. As someone who love The Last Jedi and love The Force Awakens, both. My feelings on this are rather uncomplicated. It seems like for a lot of people, they feel like you need to choose sides. Either you're a J.J. Abrams Star Wars person or a Rian Johnson Star Wars person or a no Star Wars at all person. And I just love these characters and I'm excited to see what they do. And I'm not feeling a lot of, I don't feel like a huge burden of, like, this needs to fulfill something that started in me back in the original trilogy or anything like that. I think it just needs to be, like, fun and hopefully a bit emotional. And that's what I'm looking for. What are you looking for in this movie, Anthony?
What am I looking for? I'll tell you, it's the opposite of what a lot of people would or say they're looking for, the way the movie is being built. It's this conclusion to the Skywalker series, right? Or the saga. Okay, I don't think it's the last Star Wars movie, so I want to know how this opens the door for other Star Wars storytelling. Like, I'm all for learning about who Finn is and where he came from and what Rey's actual origin is. I'd love to know how the Emperor had a grand plan all this time that involved dying 40 years ago. Like, I think there's a lot that's going to be fun and surprising, and I'm just down for that ride. Like, I'm not, I guess this is just kind of how I come to a lot of movies, and it helps me stay sane on a, in a job where I have to watch a lot of stuff is I don't come in expecting a lot. I want to be surprised, and I want you to, you know, make me feel energized and entertained by what I saw. So I'm not, I don't have any, like, if it doesn't do this, I'm not going to be happy. I liked that The Last Jedi threw us curveballs about who Luke was. And I think all of that was true to his character, truer than he is a late middle-aged badass ninja Jedi on an island who knows all and is super wise. Like, I like that he still didn't have it together and was still trying up till the end and ultimately lives up to the legend. That, to me, seems to be the theme of this new trilogy. Is living up to the legend. Finn wanting to escape and be by himself, and Rose saying, like, you're the famous Finn, like the hero of this battle against Starkiller Base. Like, I want your autograph. I'll get a selfie. Like, and he realizes he has to live up to the way others see him. I think this movie should do that. It should show us the characters we love and care about living up to the legend. Luke Skywalker, Leia Organa, maybe even the characters who are villainous, living up to what we know is maybe some decency latent inside them. So even Hux, man, he has that cat that loves him. Something good must be in there. Who would guess going into Return of the Jedi that the conclusion would be Darth Vader thinking, what have I done? And hurling the Emperor into, you know, this very dangerous pit in his throne room, which he'd never been in.
who has a pit in the throne room?
How about you? Like, what expectations do you have? Like, or what do you?
I'm with you. I think the way we can all be happiest and sanest is to go in with like no expectation or hope other than to be entertained. You know, and that's I think where. especially with The Last Jedi, once again, a film that I really liked, I think that's where a lot of folks find the source of their frustration is in their expectations not matching the story that Ryan laid out in that film. And I had someone, you know, there have been a lot of arguments circling around this on the internet past week or two. Perhaps the flames fanned by comments from, you know, people involved in this film, et cetera, in New York Times profiles. But I had someone, one person said to me, they're like, you know, they felt The Last Jedi, like, really disregarded the fan theories about Star Wars, which I think is like an insane premise to begin with. But regardless, they were like, you know, it showed disregard for fan theories. And given that you, Joanna, like make your, you know, half of your profession is in like fan theories, like how can you not see where we're coming from on this? And I just thought, like, wow, I have never taken it personally. If something that, like, I thought would happen in a TV show or whatever, like, the most famous theory that I ever put out there that turned out to not be true was so embarrassing. And it was that Jon Snow would come back with, like, a wolf brain on Game of Thrones. I was, like, so sure this is going to happen. It didn't happen. And I survived. And it just became this, like, joke. And I was just like, yeah, I was, like, a little embarrassed. But mostly I thought it was funny that I just really stuck my neck out there and I was very wrong. And it's just like, it's not none of this is personal. And also, you don't have ownership over the story. You know what I mean? The storytellers have the ownership over the story. And then once you consume it, you can create some ownership in terms of like how it relates to you personally. But like you as a fan of something do not dictate the way in which that story is going to go. And I kind of feel like Luke in The Last Jedi, where I'm like, this isn't going to go how you think. It's just sort of like, just if you let that go, the odds that you're going to enjoy something is going to be so much higher. And wouldn't we all prefer to enjoy something rather than hate on something for months and weeks and years to come, you know?
Well, sadly, I think some people do like that. That's their entertainment, is hating on something. I just think it's very hard. I agree with you 100% on all of that. Like, it's very hard to enjoy a movie when you come in so invested in the movie you have imagined. In some ways, that's why book adaptations are really difficult,
yeah,
challenging for people, because you've imagined the story a certain way.
Absolutely.
And you have to give it up a little bit and just enjoy somebody else's cover version of it, because you've created something in your head that now somebody else is interpreting, and yeah, it's never going to quite live up to the same. And I think that's part of the problem, is that people are writing these movies in their heads and have these very intense expectations that, and they're not willing to open up to it. They're watching all these movies like Edgar Wright watching Ant-Man. Like, yeah, you have a version of it you wanted to do, and you're not telling it, and you're never going to enjoy that no matter how good the movie is, you know? So it's just like, you've gotta let go. And, that's a very like specific real life example, but I think it's sort of like, people are so busy writing their fan fiction that they can't enjoy the actual ride, the actual story. But you know, that if you do that, God bless, that's your thing. Okay. I think you gotta, in any story, you know, when I was in high school, I was in school plays, and I had this, teacher, Mr. Carousel. All right. Well, of course we're theater kids, right? But like that tracks. You know, my teacher, Mr. Carosella, said, you know what the difference between a rehearsal and a performance is? It's an audience. And the audience is a key part of the storytelling, but you have to just be willing to go with it. And you don't have to like it.
Absolutely.
But I think it's very hard to come in at the very beginning with super rigid expectations of specific beats that the story must resolve in a fashion that you've preordained, and expect to walk out enjoying that, whatever the experience was. Like, sorry, just not.
I'll give you an example of something that I like used to be a huge fan of, and then I'm not anymore necessarily. And that's the TV show Doctor Who. There was a time when I was like really, really into what they were doing on Doctor Who, and then now we're in an era where I'm not really into what they're doing on Doctor Who. And like, the thing is, I can be I'm sometimes disappointed by that because I loved loving Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm disappointed that what the show they're making now is no longer a show that really appeals to me. That being said, what I would never do is try to go ruin someone else's good time. If they're enjoying Doctor Who, it's none of my business. And I guess the impulse that I don't understand is the need to yell at other people about how bad the thing that they enjoy is. Because, like, what? Why? Life feels way too short for that, in my opinion, so.
Yeah, I mean, if it's something you consider to be shameful or cruel, you know.
That's different.
This was wrong. I judged Bill Burr's comedy at the beginning of this, of our broadcast here. But I think it's okay to critique things. I just think, I'm saying the same thing over and over.
Critique and critiquing things is fine. Absolutely. I'm not saying
it's okay not to like things.
There's a difference between critiquing or maybe even talking to people who agree with you and share your critique, and that's comforting because you can be like, yep, we both don't like this thing, and that makes me feel saner because, like, otherwise, you know, I feel so alone, etc. But then to, like, feel the need to lash out at people who are enjoying the thing, that's the step beyond that I don't understand.
And if you're confident in your opinion, it's fine to share it. I think, it's not great to walk into a group of people who are enjoying something and tell them how stupid they are. That's never cool. Don't be that person.
So we will be seeing The Rise of Skywalker soon. Is there the other question I have is, it's not the last Star Wars movie, but it's potentially the last Star Wars movie for a while, because it looks, I mean, allegedly there's a film in 2 years, but we don't, you know, plans are changing fast and furiously over at Lucasfilm. We don't quite know what's happening there. We do know that, you know, the future of Star Wars is very Disney Plus focused. We've got a lot of, we've got the Obi-Wan show coming, the Cassian Andor, show coming. But is there anything that, I mean, if this is the last Star Wars film for a little while, I mean, does that mean, I mean, I don't know. You and I lived through a time where there was no Star Wars for a really long time. So, like, I don't know that I see it as, like, this earth-shaking thing, you know?
I don't think it's a bad thing for there not to be a Star Wars movie every single year.
I agree. When I got out of, I think it was Solo, which just was not my favorite Star Wars film, I think the slogan that I came up with is, like, make Star Wars rare again. Like, Star Wars, I don't mind there being, like, a lot of Disney Plus shows. I think that's a great idea. But in terms of, like, a film, like, it should feel, like, special and rare and an event and all that sort of stuff. And I don't think Marvelizing it is really the way to go, you know?
Yeah, I think I agree.
All right. Well, then, you know, it's just you and me agreeing with each other all the way up and down the board.
Well, yeah. No, this show is better when we disagree. I disagree with you. But.
Well, is there two last questions? Is there one character we've seen before? One character we've been following either from the original trilogy or these new films that you are most, like, curious and invested into seeing the, like, resolution of their story?
A character from the new films who I'm interested in seeing a resolution to.
Like, the one you're, like, most curious and excited about, sort of thing.
I think I'm most interested in finding out a little more about, I like both Finn and Rey. Like, people are so prefixed on Rey's origin story. I really want to know about Finn. Like, that's a character who I just relate to him, like, as somebody who grew up one way politically in a family that believed certain things and then evolved and changed. Like, I think, not to make it, I guess, so rooted in our own world, but I love the idea of a character who, as a young man, has a wake up and goes, I don't have to do this. You know, a Phil Oaks kind of, I'm not marching anymore kind of epiphany. And I also understand his impulse in The Last Jedi. I've like, I just want to get out. I don't want these problems. I just want to live my life and be happy and find somewhere quiet to live out my days. And yet he's drawn back to it. So like, that's a character who I just like him. I like him because he is self-critiquing all the time and trying to do the right thing and doesn't necessarily have any special abilities that, that arm or equip him or shield him. So yeah, I kind of want to see where Finn goes.
Excellent. And then my follow-up question. I'm going to cheat as kind of a tie between, not to be basic, but Rey and Kylo. Like, just that Return of the Jedi, Darth and Luke sort of like, I know there's good in you, push and pull. That's very powerful and interesting to me. So, just to see if JJ wants to do a similar thing he did in Force Awakens and like remix, the third film of the franchise, then like, yeah, the Vader, Luke, Kylo Ray sort of connection redemption thing is the thing that I'm most interested in. And then my last question to you is there a brand new character in the film, that you're most excited to see what they're all about?
I'm very curious what this Zori Bliss, masked character is all about. like cool costume. Let's see where it goes. I'm feeling that. So I kind of want to see who she is. And, gosh, yeah, I guess that's the main one.
It'll be a real loss for all hair lovers across the world. If Carrie Russell never takes off that helmet, but she might not.
It might
be a Mando situation or a Phasma situation where we never see Carrie's face, but I'm a huge Carrie Russell fan. And yeah, I'm really excited about Zori Bliss. Even if she's only in the film for 5 minutes, I don't care. That's
fine. I wouldn't mind if Phasma came back. If that was a surprise in the movie. I would love to see Phasma come back as like this scorched, burned, scarred creature, and they realize, oh my god, that's Phasma. Like,
they're like, oh my god, she's been in the trash compactor this whole time. Sorry, I know that's the end of Force Awakens, but
Lance, I got to say, like, as a original Star Wars fan.
Lando,
man, I want to know what's been up with him. Another fascinating character, like a guy who, like Han Solo, like Finn, is just a guy, and he is struggling to do the right thing. Has the capability to look out only for himself, but gives that up. People judge Lando for selling out Han and all that, but like, characters don't evolve and change unless occasionally they make bad decisions and try to come back from them. I think that's okay. You can still love the character.
Han stole Lando's girlfriend. I mean,
and his ship and all sorts of stuff.
Which is like, the same. His ship is his girlfriend and he stole it.
Oh, is that what you meant? Like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, wait. I was like, maybe literally.
If I were Lando, I would have done way worse to Han, to be honest with you. All right. Well, those are some of our like vague expectations for the Rise of Skywalker. We'll see what happens. But mostly all I want for Christmas, the holidays, is for everyone to have a fun time with this movie. That's the dream. Well, what if we all just like it? Wouldn't that be nice? And then we could all just talk about how much we liked it and like, you know, get new BB-8 toys or whatever, and just like enjoy it as much as we're all enjoying Baby Yoda. That would make me really happy. So
I think like it's okay to have strong feelings about things, obviously. People are going to react how they're going to react. But look around this world that we're in, the real one. There are things to be really disheartened and troubled and angry about. And if you are directing a lot of your energy toward being angry about a type of movie, or people who enjoy it that you disagree with, then I think you are, you're missing something. So prioritize, you know, that's all I would say. And try to enjoy the fun things and be serious about the serious things.
And the last lecture from mom and dad here the last thing I'll say is, like, if you have time, I actually think and you didn't like The Last Jedi, or you were just sort of tepid on The Last Jedi, I would recommend, life is short, but if you have the time, rewatch The Last Jedi, because every single person I've talked to who's rewatched it has liked it even more. Even if you liked it to begin with, liked it even more, or didn't like it, actually wound up really liking it. So, like, I'm not saying you have to like it. You're allowed to dislike The Last Jedi. But this is true of all Rian Johnson films I found, is that they only get better upon repeat viewing. Mm-hmm. And so if you went and saw Knives Out and you really liked it, like, you know, I don't know, maybe give Rian's Star Wars another chance.
And there's a reason for that, because, like, he subverts your expectations. And this is what got J.J. Abrams into trouble with that New York Times interview, where he says basically, yeah, when you repeatedly subvert expectations, people's expectations are not met. And I think that's true, too. But I think it takes an extra step from the audience to say, oh, yeah, this is an acquired taste. Like, I'm not quite sure what he's doing here, but he's doing something different. And yeah, it's not what I expected. But it's kind of cool. Oh, it's really cool. Oh, no, this is great. Like, that's literally the three stages of watching a Rian Johnson movie.
I think that's right. That's right. All right. So, until next week, Chapter 7, which, to remind everyone, is coming a little early. It will be dropping on Wednesday, so we'll hope to have this podcast up right around then. I will be in LA. We will both be watching a Star Wars film, so we're going to try to figure it all out. But we'll have some Rise of Skywalker reactions in there as well for you next week. Until then, Anthony, where can folks find you?
They can find me on Twitter, at Bresnikan, and on VanityFair.com.
All right. You can find me on Twitter, at Joe Wrote This, also on VanityFair.com, and we will see you next week.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now. From PRX.